Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of In Their Own Words on Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio. I'm Jill Pernesti. And as always, I want to give a shout out to those that have allowed me this opportunity, Chief Bobby Halton and editor of the website, Pete Prochillo, who have allowed me again to bring the authors and the writers of online magazine articles and the magazine articles to you and to give you their perspective right from their own words to you, to where we all can learn something and hopefully get better. And today we actually have the boss on along with two members who have written a book that will be upcoming. It's not out yet. It's not published, but it's called High Rise Buildings, Understanding the Vertical Challenges. And again, we have Jerry Tracy and Jack Murphy on with us along with the boss, Bobby Halton. And I'll allow each one of you to introduce, even though I feel like I'm interviewing the Beatles, the rock stars here. But Chief Halton, you're the boss. I'll let you go first. Introduce yourself. Tell our listeners a little bit as if they didn't know who you were.
Hi, I'm Bobby Halton, and I work for Fire Engineering Magazine and FDIC.
All right, and thanks. Jerry Tracy, Chief Tracy.
Good afternoon, and thank you for this privilege. Explain to the fire service what Jack Murphy and I and Jim Murtaugh have been working on really for the last 4 years. And it's a book certainly about high-rise, but everything that has not been written yet is about to come.
And Chief Jack Murphy, introduce yourself to our listeners.
Hello, everybody. Yes, I'm one of the contributing editors with Fire Engineering. I teach at John Jay College in the city, retired as a fire marshal in New Jersey. And for the last 30 some odd years, dealing with the high rises in New York City with the fire safety directors.
Again, thanks for coming on. And we'll get right into it. And I'll ask you guys, what was the impetus behind this book? Why this book? I know a little bit about how a lot of the writers of fire engineering articles and those contributors, you know, at FDIC, they will meet and try to, you know, hey, I want to write this book, that book. What led you three to write this book, or what gave you that idea to say, hey, this is needed in the fire service?
Jack, you want me to hit on that?
You got it, Jerry. You recruited me.
I'll be honest. Certainly, you know, when we started this book, I was a chief officer, and I had been a chief officer for more than 10 years, being an incident commander at high rise, things like that. I really wanted to start writing a book on high rise when I was a lieutenant and a captain. And I wanted to come from the perspective of, because, you know, the book from O'Hagan, and you certainly read some work by Vinnie Dunn, and he was a mentor to me as well. I worked in Manhattan. He was the deputy chief. He was the commander. He was a mentor. But when they wrote things, it was from the perspective of command. There was nothing written on the perspective of from the fire floor. And it was the experiences that those units, whether it be engine, truck, or whatever, the challenge that they met, you know, utilizing elevators that sometimes didn't work, humping the stairs with heavy equipment, and when you get to the fire floor, having to take a blow and recover just physically before you go to work, going in deep to make searches into buildings where you needed a search rope. There were so many companies and firefighters that would go deep into buildings around the United States, whether they be warehouses and things like that, and they didn't know the techniques of using search ropes. So all of these things, I wanted to write about all the disciplines that were needed to get you and your members home safe in a very challenging position. So it took quite some time, and it was God's will that it would take some time, because I was starting to experience let's say, fire dynamics, and other people could use the word fire behavior. We're going to use the word fire dynamics and high rise, in that the policies and procedures that were brought forth from buildings in, of ordinary construction, say apartment houses and things like that, built of ordinary construction, they were the same tactics and procedures that were brought forth into high-rise buildings. And when I was involved in high-rise firefighting, I was learning that these tactics, in some cases, aren't appropriate, and the ventilation practices aren't appropriate, because it's a whole different arena, if you will, because smoke travels differently, and it travels on flow paths. And quite frankly, at the time I was a lieutenant and captain, that wasn't even part of the vocabulary of the fire service. We didn't know what flow paths were. So that being said, I was trying to convince the department that we needed to change tactics and strategies based upon this environment, the high-rise environment. And the only way they were going to change was we had to prove our case with the research from the National Institute of Standard and Technology. Jim Murtaugh had some experiences as well, but he hadn't developed those relationships. So a lot of that is in this book, how that came about, why it came about, and why those that research, if you will, has changed our SOPs in high-rise firefighting and why it works. And what we also needed, and why I approached Jack, of course, was his extensive knowledge in codes and all the requirements of passive, active fire protection systems and things like that. And Jack's going to tell us, the fire service, if you don't have a seat at the table in code change, well, then you're losing out and you're not looking out for your members. And this is why Jack is part of, is a contributor to this book.
What one thing that I wanted to, okay, so Jack Murphy, Chief Jack Murphy, expert on the codes and everything that goes along with learning how, what needs to go in these buildings and systems when we build them. Chief Murphy, what would you say is one of the biggest, Jerry mentioned not having a seat at the table, but what other things would you say is our biggest mistakes in the fire service when it comes to the codes and understanding how these buildings are built or the fire protection systems? Because firefighters don't really get into all that. Or it's not the glamorous part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the code set the table for what you're going to fight down the road. You know, you put up crappy things, things are going to happen more to you than ever before.
Is that a technical term, Jack?
No, it's a Jersey term.
That's all right. You can edit it out.
Bobby, you can't take them out of Jersey.
Yeah.
I tried.
The whole idea is, you know, the codes are there for a reason. You know, again, a lot of them are significant from fires, you know, one New York Plaza, one Meridian, the World Trade Center, Cook County, and so forth. But the thing is that we're constantly battling every code cycle. We try to put things in, and then we get, when we win, they want to take it out at the next cycle. So right. Those things there, this is both on from the ICC side and the NFPA side. And by the whole idea of what we looked at too is saying that you can't be trading off these things just because the building's sprinkled. You can do this for smaller buildings, but the higher up you go, you need both things in place, particularly over the life cycle of the building. So the idea here is that we're trying to give the firefighters a perspective of how codes are created and adopted. And the big thing that we have going for us today is something prescriptive is like things that are in the book and written out. Then there's performance-based, which is, hey, we're going to have a model. We're going to do this and everything. And that's driven by the professional engineers. And the fire service has to have an understanding of that. All right. All the prescriptive ones are of past experiences, things of that nature. But when you get into performance base, you better have a certified fire protection engineer on your side. Mm-hmm. And we tell them that, hey, if you don't have one, the code allows you that they will hire one for you as a third party. So these are some of the things we're bringing out on that side. And these are all the challenges, the unique challenges for these vertical buildings. It isn't just the, you know, when I get there, then we're going to have take care of operations and everything.
Chief to advance in rank in the FDNY, in some cases, on the bibliography of the exam, whether it be a lieutenant, captain, or chief, you might be asked the question about codes. And Local Law 5 was a code that came about. Local Law 5 was a change to the New York City building code after the One Meridian Plaza, and there was a fire a few months later at 919 Third Avenue, where at both of those high-rise fires, there was two fatalities in one, three fatalities in another, but it caused changes to the codes. And now I used to teach, let's say, promotional classes for promotional exam. It was a company called Fire Tech. And how could you convince an audience of students that if you understand the codes, it might save your life? And then they would look up at you like, what are you talking about? Like you had three heads. And I would say, okay, would you believe that Local Law 5 requires two-way communication from certain areas of the building? And if you run out of air and you have an issue where your radio is not effective to call command and say, I have a firefighter down, or I have a firefighter here who just had a heart attack and we need assistance right away. There's five places in the building you'll find two-way communications, and you could use the acronym WAMEE, W-A-M-E-E. That's the warden phone station, A, any air handling room, M, a mechanical equipment room, E, an elevator, or E, an elevator machinery room. Those five, you're going to find two-way communications there, and it might save your life. And now all of a sudden, the light bulb would light up.
Chief Halton, when we talk about education and for fire engineering or all the articles and things that come through to you, you know, we don't see a lot on high-rise fires or high-rise firefighting. You know, there's only been a few books written. Just curious why you think that is. Obviously, because, you know, everybody thinks big cities, but, you know, high-rises for everybody could be, you know, a 6 or 7 story building, depending on the size of your department. Just kind of curious your thoughts on the educational aspect or where we, you know, were up until this book with educating firefighters in high rise.
Well, it's a great point. And there have been, you know, something Jerry said earlier, I always kind of drop into my role as the ombudsman, but to your point, Joe, first, there's always a need for new voices on any topic, and high-rise firefighting has less text because the proliferation of high-rises is not as widespread as all of our other fire problems, if you will, right? Residential buildings, low-rises, standalone commercials, all the rest of it are pretty much uniformly scattered throughout the United States, but high-rises are generally in urban centers, and some urban centers have more than others, and some of them, you know, they're not as busy, right? Because high rises tend to be, they have floor wardens, they have regular inspections, people pay a little more attention to them.
Right.
They just tend to be, and in most environments, the residential ones aren't as common, and they're more restricted to office spaces, which tend to have less fires than the residential ones. So that's one cause for why we don't have books on it. But to Jerry's point earlier, you know, when he was talking about the flow paths, the Braidwood back in the 1880s or early 1890s wrote a great deal about what he called air currents within high rises. And, which unfortunately what happens with writing and to the point to kind of tie this into Joe's point is that Braidwood wrote, 130 years ago about it. So his tenor and his language and the buildings were quite different. And so there's always a need for new, fresh voices, and not that there's anything new or fresh about Jack Murphy, but just I had to go there, Jerry. So there's going to be voices. Jack has and I'm just teasing, Jack has a tremendous amount of fresh new insight, because Jack is one of the rare people who has this unquenchable thirst for knowledge. So when you combine the operational experience and the gravitas of a Jerry Tracy, who commanded downtown high-rise fires for probably close to 20 years, if I'm not mistaken, Jerry, as from captain all the way through to battalion chief. He was in downtown high-rise districts, and then as covering chiefs and all the rest of it, and covering officers, just innumerable amount of experience in those buildings. And then Jack has been involved in the protection systems and the planning and the design and the codes of this for well on to 30 years now. And he's a relentless student. He's one of these people who, you know, will probably perish with a book in his hand on the latest, you know, elevator innovation, or the latest, automatic closure system, or the latest, or some controversy over, you know, burn time. So, you know, to be able to put these two gentlemen together in a book, you have the opportunity to create a flavor that's never been done before. We've had operations books, we've had theory books, we've had strategy books, but never before have we had this combination, this incredible combination, you know, of a Murtaugh, Tracy, and a Murphy coming together, where you have almost the whole enchilada, if you will. All we need would be a construction engineer, which would slow the whole process down. And
the things we've talked about on construction, we've run it past engineers, by the way. And I would mention the gentleman's name. His name is Scott Nackerman. His dad was one of the people that, let's say, worked on and was a member of the New York Burn Center, if you will, for the New York City firefighters. So this young man, Scott Nackerman, when he was a adolescent, was hanging around FDNY seminars. He was in the lobby with his dad, handing out Burn Center paraphernalia and things like that. And he would go on to become a structural engineer. Now he's a forensic engineer, but he worked for Thornton Tomasetti, DeSimone, and now he's with another concern where he actually does investigations and studies on forensic failures. So all of our work has been run past engineers to keep us honest.
You tell our listeners, whoever wants to speak up on this, how the book is put together. Now, again, we have Chief Murphy talking about the codes and that, but how, explain to our listeners the rest of the book, how it's put together. What are some of the new, we talked about the fire behavior aspect, but what other items are going to be in this book that may not have been in the other few books written specifically to high rises? Anybody want to take that one?
Jack, you want to give them part one, two, and three?
We broke the book down into three sections. Part one is the understanding the vertical challenge. And there we're talking about, obviously, the codes, the building construction, how we started out with cast iron and worked our way up. Now we're into modular buildings. Then we're into the CDLs, CDTs, fire protection systems, how they've advanced in these buildings. Building systems, uniqueness of that. Building systems was so big, it's two chapters. You know, you have miles and miles of wiring and ductwork and systems running through. You have sub panels all over the place that are controls. The key things in these buildings is, I tell people, you know, when you look for these main shutoffs and that, you need to know where they are. You need to know where the closest isolation thing is too. And we teach them about sprinkler systems in the upper floors. Take a look, and stair A is the sprinkler shutoff valve there. If not, go over to B. And if it is on B, that means it's covering the whole floor. And if you go up in another building and you see sprinkler control valves both on the 12th floor and stair A and B, that means they come off the floor and meet somewhere in the middle. So you need to know where that isolation is that shuts off in the middle somewhere. So these are some of the things that we're bringing into the book too. Talking about new systems, ESS, energy storage systems, code generation, high energy, what you call gas coming into buildings that produces alternative power sources, like four lines of 4,160 volts back into the complex, running off a controlled environment with high pressure gas that has a jet engine inside what I call the furnace, and going into that stuff and saying, well, once you get through those six chapters there, and we talk about what if these walls could talk to you.
Yeah,
all these buildings are telling you something. You know, each one is unique in itself. The Chrysler building is different than the Empire State Building. The 1960 buildings are different than the Empire State Building. Elmer Chapman, the division chief in the third, years ago, they commented on the lightweight construction in the new high-rises. And he said this way before 9/11, a plane would go through, wouldn't lose altitude or speed. All right. So he knew he was dealing with a different animal. In this stuff, we took that information and then went into part two, is command and firefighting units, talking about command management, the administration here of the high-rise buildings, and what you go through all that stuff in the way of thinking of that. And the other thing there, Jerry will elaborate a little bit more from Jim Murtaugh. He goes into brain one thinking and brain two, and he explains that a little bit more, because you're dealing with such complexities here. Yeah. And you need some checklists and balances as you're going through this. You need help right down to the lobby control unit working that. And the last part is section three, is erecting skyscrapers and looking ahead. So we talk about as the building goes up under construction. And then we talk about a decommissioned building. That's right now I have a 40-story high-rise building coming down in New York City to take place for a 70-story one going up. And what are the new designs coming out, these cantilevers? We talk about air rights over a low-rise building. Now the high-rise comes over and wants to put a cantilever over the low-rise. And while you're taking care of the high-rise building, I have to take care of the low-rise building and change the roof membrane on those things, because now that if a fire starts at a low rise, it's going to be impinging on the cantilever. So all those things we bring out in there, and in as we go through the book, where we need to intersect notes, they're in there. Where we need to intersect relative information on what we call the code segments, just because we wrote it up front, we're also injecting into the subject matter as you go through the whole book, to lead you to, these are the rationales why we did this. This is why this stuff is here. And that's basically the three parts of the book.
Now, one of the things that I found interesting about this is that, you know, you've added some items in this book that you don't see in other books, especially high rise. You talk about man-made disasters. You talk about hazardous material events, active shooter and workplace mm-hmm. violence. Yeah. So this is all an all-encompassing book. When you guys wrote this, or when you're speaking on it, what is the biggest fallacy or the biggest mistake or problem that you see small to medium-sized fire departments make in a high-rise building? Now, let's move away from a large Chicago, New York City, but the mid to smaller departments that have these high-rises, what are the biggest mistakes or the biggest issues, if you were to instruct or teach there, that you would recommend or you would talk about or what you see and have read about?
Let me take that, Jack.
Yeah, you take it and I'll follow up with something. Go ahead.
I believe what I see as a fault, if you will, of departments, and I wouldn't just say in North America, let's just say the fire service. They place too much emphasis on the incident command system, whereas their policy is that the first unit to arrive assumes command and stays in the lobby. And basically, my opinion of that is that the department and the chiefs are more concerned with the support of command than they are about why are we here? Am I here for a fire or an emergency? Quick intervention. You've heard the cliche throughout the fire service, quick water on the fire? Well, that's not a cliche. The soonest that you could get into a position to determine exactly why we're here, what is the danger to life, because that's what we're in the business of, the protection of life. Property is second. So really, we understand that the first units to arrive, and Jack was mentioning, you know, the beginning of the book, it talks about building systems. There's two chapters on building systems. The majority, the greatest percentage of response that the fire service will respond to a high rise is going to be for an emergency. It, the greatest percentage is electrical emergencies. Then from there, it could be a water emergency. Then it could be a release of some type of a chemical or something like that. It could be a minor hazmat, but it, you know, could affect life, things like that. So understanding systems, you know, Jack was saying, where would you find valves, things like that. If you understand the system, you could alleviate the problem, mitigate the emergency. That's why we're in business. But it's all about life. And if the first unit arrives, granted, this unit is going to find out. And what we're also talking about in the book is the future, smart firefighting, smart cities, and using smart technology, reading and being able to access cloud information, information about the building on the way to the box, and meaning in the response. We would also like to access the building management system to say on the way to the building, has the HVAC system shut down? Have the elevators been recalled? All of those things. Once we get in the lobby, we're going to double check with the alarm panel and make sure where did the detector go off? What's the location? Have any other detectors gone off since then? And have any detectors gone off previous to that that I don't know about? And then we'll head out and we'll go to that position. We're not going to stay in the lobby. We're going to suggest don't leave a unit in the lobby. You want somebody up there right away. Sometimes it takes 10 minutes just to get in place.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? Wait for the next unit to show up? That might be another 10 minutes. So now if you had a fire, it's got a 20-minute headway. 69 Washington Street was the Cook County Administration Building fire. The first fire unit to arrive, and it was a fire on the 12th floor. From the moment the Chicago Fire Department received the alarm to the moment they started water on the fire floor was 12 minutes. And in that 12 minutes, the fire had gained, let's say, control or was burning 14% of the floor area. So do you want to wait another 20 minutes and have it gain 50% of the floor area? That's your choice. Yeah. So that's one of the greatest faults of the fire service, is being more concerned with the command system than they are about water on the fire. And I know Bobby would like to say something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's where the book really does a great job of addressing that, right? In other words, when you get to the section where they talk about level, what Jack referred to as level one and level two, what he was talking about there is how we make decisions, and how we make decisions also affects how we perform. And level one is basically what Gary Klein called recognition prime decision making, or naturalistic decision making. Kahneman, the Nobel laureate Kahneman, terms that level one. And that's where the guys are talking about the decision making, right? And the level one decision making, to Jerry's point, has to be intuitive, and it has to be based on experience and drill and a certain set of beliefs and assumptions that we know can fairly well guide us in most cases. Now, the level two stuff is obviously because of high rises and their complexity, to where then you have to start worrying about more advanced, you know, smoke movement, stack effect, you know, resource staging, water, you know, all the much more intricate levels of process that has to be done at the command level that can impede making aggressive and effective movement against fire. So what's great about this book is it doesn't discount one for the other, and it certainly weighs the necessity of both jointly. Neither one is sufficient alone to be effective in a high rise, but both jointly are necessary in order to make an effective fire attack in a high rise fire. In other words, you cannot have crews paralyzed with indecision because they don't have enough repertoire to make, you know, good moves on. But you
100%
also
correct.
Right. So,
right
so
on the money, Bobby.
This book, when the guys and gals get into the pages of this book, they're going to say, wow, I can do both. You know, right. I can be aggressive, and I can be, you know, proactive, and I can be, you know, getting water onto the fire as fast spot in a safe and effective manner, while at the same time falling back into level two decision making to you know, make sure that my actions have backups and my actions are correct, and that I'm using all my available resources and, you know, all the technology that's built into the building, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's why this book is so radically different than any other high-rise firefighting book that's ever been out there. But here's what's also really, really important. You know, Thomas Jefferson just said the most dangerous man in the world is a man who's only read the newspaper, but he also said, which is a great quote, but he's also said that the dangerous man in the world read one book, right?
Right.
So you want to read this book, and you want to read McGrail's book, and you want to read Hagen's book, and you want to read, because all of those voices together make you the best arbiter of a high rise fire when you have to fight that fire, because exactly. Different phraseology and different photos and different, you know, all of it, you know, that you can't just say, you know, read this book. This is all you need is this book. If that was true, yeah, good luck. Right. I mean,
right.
The only book you could say that about is the Bible. In everything else, read everything. So, but this book takes a really cool opportunity to look at what we know about cognitive neuroscience and firefighting and blends the two in a really intelligent and useful way.
What, you know, and another good point here is that we always fall back on our past experiences is based, you know, as far as our size up and everything. But when you don't have the experience to fall back on, then that's when you start utilizing the wrong tactics. I guess that would be how I would look at it. Or you start to put the residential, like Chief Tracy said, the residential tactics into these kind of, you know, these high rise buildings. And that's where we go wrong too, is that we just don't have the experience and we don't have anything to fall back on. And this is where these books and these lessons, you mentioned in each one of these chapters, guys, you talk about two things, questions for discussion and lessons learned. Can you elaborate a little bit more on how you, what you were looking for, or what you got for lessons learned, and what are you utilizing for questions for discussion?
Yeah. Utilizing lessons learned is talk about just a five-year test, a standpipe test, sprinkler test in a building. And we talk about the value of that. I had a five-year test in the city, 27-story building. And in one of the rises, during the test, I blew out a quarter-size hole on the vertical pipe, which led me to explore a lot more about that pipe. The pipe was put in the 1930s. So this is a 50-year plus pipe. When we went down below grade, the 12-inch pipe was filled with all the tuberculin and everything. I could barely put my fist through it. That little test took me to replacing all horizontal piping for three blocks. Wow. And the other thing it brought me out to, I obviously had to get capital money, but it also gave me an opportunity. What can I make better? Besides replacing the pipe, I had in two grades below ground, I had two control valves for 20 buildings. So in order for me to work on one, I had to shut 10 buildings down. I said to them that we're going to put a control valve, OS and Y valve for each stair riser. I had over 37 stair risers in this complex. We broke that down. Then we took a look and saw where we had dead ends going into like U-shaped buildings at the top of the U, and we could cross them over to like a regular grid system out in the street for the hydrants and everything. So that one thing that was there as a proactive thing led me in a test mode rather than a fire mode.
Yeah.
Those are the lessons. And those
let me
are,
give you a, let me give you a lessons learned, if I may just interrupt. I apologize. You know, Jack is talking about not only, let's say, hydrostatically testing, flow testing. It's not just sprinkler systems, it's standpipe systems. It's hydrostatically testing FDC connections, Siamese connections, things like that. I'll give you one lesson learned. And this was a Midtown engine company, 65 engine, single engine, very aggressive engine. We respond, I'm working with them one night. We're taking up from another fire and we're now responding as a third due engine to a fire that they should have been first due, but because we were at another fire, now we're coming in third due. It's a high rise building between 6th Avenue and 7th Avenue. It's around 39th Street. So coming in on exposure one, there's already engine companies supplying the FDC connection, things like that. And we go around the back and that particular FDC, nobody knew about it, but 65 engine knew that there was another FDC on the next block. They are complaining. Now, this is two companies supplying the system, one on exposure one, the A side, one on exposure three, the C side. And they're complaining about low pressures up on the fire floor. The engineer or the chauffeur of 65 engine, he knew that it could possibly be the clapper valve just below the FDC Siamese that goes into the building, right below that is going to be a clapper valve so that when water is not being pumped into the system, this clapper closes so that the water from the system doesn't drain back out. Well, he knew that sometimes these clapper valves get stuck because of mineral deposits, rust, and things like that. So this engineer, basically what he did, and we didn't have flow meters on the rig at the time to understand that the building was not accepting water. But what he did was he closed the gate and he told us, I'm going to close and open the gate of supply to the building. He closed the gate, he opened it up, he closed the gate, and he opened it up. He created a water hammer that popped the clapper that was stuck closed.
Huh. Wow.
And now it gave the building water.
Wow.
So yeah. Who knows things like that? Right. But somebody would experience.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what's fascinating about that though is a water hammer. Nowadays, the pumps are being designed. So it's almost, you know, the engine pumps. So it's almost impossible to do that, to shut them down that hard. You know what I mean?
I believe it. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. They're being designed so that we, you know, we don't create hammers like we, you know, used to be able to just, you know, just shut it down hard, but it doesn't, they don't do that anymore. You know, the computers won't let you do that anymore.
Yeah. Interesting.
And Joe, and one of the other things too, besides lessons learned, in the appendices, and I'll just explain one. There are quite a few. In a recent article that Jim Davis in Chicago wrote for Fire Engineering, fire investigation teams making building announcements at high-rise fires, he said that when they arrive at these residential fires, you know, people are leaving their apartments and everything else, and they're having issues with that. They were trying to come up with, well, how do you take control and do manual voice messages to the tenants. So based on that, I was talking to Jim and I said, Jim, you know, in New York City for the fire safety directors in the commercial buildings, where we teach them how to make announcements for everything. I said, what if I just send you some things, you take a look at it, and then you adopt what you need to do that. And what it was, it opened my eyes up to say that upon arrival, you know, what do you tell the tenants, you know, in the buildings, and how does the system work? Where are the speakers? Are they just in the car? Are they in the apartments? So each system, as it goes through a process and the codes may change. So I said to Jim, I'm going to give you several. Here's one upon your arrival. You make an announcement, give them some comfort that you're in the building. You're checking things out. Right. You another one, you're continuing to do investigation. If you have a smoke or a fire condition, you can talk to them about that. If you're going to do an evacuation of some parts, then you tell them what floors if you're going to do that. And then at the end, and as the process goes on, you could be there. Some buildings, I know a big fire in Toronto a few years ago at Hording, they were there for 12 hours.
And so as the official ombudsman, I'll interject here for just real quick. So just so everybody's clear, Chicago has a pretty cool high-rise response profile. And when Jack used the term fire investigation team, it's not an investigation team after the fire. It's a team of firefighters that the Chicago FD sends up when they get the receipt of a fire to investigate fire conditions and what they have up on the fire floor above and below. So they actually send up a team that does an investigation while the first two crews are rolling up. And that team is sent up to gather info and things of that nature. A quick aside, also as the ombudsman, in several hotels in Las Vegas where they have pre-recorded messages that you can give out about fires in high-rise buildings, you have the option, and I think he said it was Larry Flint's hotel, the Hustler Hotel, to use either a male or a female voice for the pre-recorded message, really? Which I just thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Not really meaningful or important to anybody, but it figures in Vegas, right? I remember it was in Clark Lamping, who will be at FDIC talking about high-rise fires, and Clark is very experienced. He's Clark's from Clark County, which is the Vegas Strip, so he goes to a lot of hotel fires, high-rise hotel fires, mm-hmm. and he showed the picture of the panel, and it had announcement male voice, announcement female voice for the different announcements. It was hysterical, and it's a real hotel.
Yeah. Event, so. Yeah. And these are one of the things we saw as a need here, the residentials. Bob makes a point, the automatic alarms. I had one, just real quick. Someone called me across the country and said they wanted these type of manual announcements after the automatic one. This is the automatic announcement. Attention, there's a fire in the building. Please evacuate your apartments and shelter in place in the stairwell.
Oh!
And I said to the chief, I said, Who made that up? Did anyone check that out? All right. And this was a V-shaped building. In the bottom of the V was the core. And I said, you make up an announcement saying that if it's not your apartment, stay in your apartment. If it is your apartment, evacuate onto the floor, go past the fire doors and go to the other side on that floor. And these are some things that they're still out there, but little things that fall through the cracks. And then when you need them at the right time is, what are you saying when you get there after these automatic alarms? That I thought that was a big loophole.
As I'm going to ask each one of you now, let's take a young member who's listening to this and is looking forward to, Brian purchasing this book and so on. But in the meantime, I'm going to ask each one of you to give out an incident that you would want someone to look up, research, or a high-rise event. To me, growing up in the job, it was the MGM Grand Hotel fire in Vegas in 1980, I think it was. But each one of you, if you were to give an event where someone can research and get some lessons. I'll start with you, Chief Halton. A high-rise event that you would recommend a younger member research and look up?
One Meridian Plaza.
Okay. Jerry, Chief Tracy?
I was just going to try and do a quick search of a fire that was down south. And, my age is getting, it's catching up with me. But it was a response to a high-rise residential building. And the events were that the excuse was they had been there 20 times in a month.
Oh, and the kid got hung up in the coaxial cable.
Exactly.
Memphis. Memphis. Yeah. A dead-end hallway.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. No, yep. It wasn't a dead-end hallway.
Oh, no?
It was a stairwell at the dead end, and that Proby came out of there because he was looking for his lieutenant. The lieutenant was also hung up in the cabling in the hallway.
Three feet from the door.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, all the mistakes that you could think of was, one, complacency, not treating every response legitimate. They took the elevator to the fire floor. That was another mistake. They claimed that the reason that it flashed over, or they thought, or the inference was made, the reason it flashed over in the hallway was because they used master stream from the exterior. And I take exception to that. The master stream from the exterior, and then there's ways of doing that as well, you know, doing it safely. But that hallway flashed over because they were in a flow path. Let's put it that way. But that is a lot of lessons to be learned. And there's an interview, by the way, of the chief of that department. And I have a copy of the interview. He was so emotional talking about the loss of those firefighters. If that doesn't get your attention, nothing will.
And for full disclosure, and I think we should say this right here, and Jerry can back me up, when we were doing the high, and Kerber and I just told this story the other day, when we were doing the high-rise wind-driven fire study in Chicago, Jerry, remember we were down using that towers?
Yes, sir.
Can't remember what the towers were. But anyway, me and Healy got jammed up, remember? And that was controlled condition fires. Yes. And Healy and I underestimated the speed. We were on the other side of the building, and George and I got jammed up. And you were there. And George and I came out of there in a hurry.
Absolutely.
And so these fires, you know, these high rise fires, people look at the big building and they think that they're going to have a lot of time. And the answer is no.
Fire can't outrun fire.
The ferocity of the movement, you know, the MGM Grand's a great example just mm-hmm. on the combustible surfaces. But even the heat that Healy and I got hit with was like, boy, we were like, okay, we're in a bad spot.
Mm.
It was like a scene out of Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah. Yep.
Jack Murphy, you got a one that you would want someone?
Yeah. 69 Washington Street in Chicago. Vinny Dunn and I were called in to do that building. I from the actions of the fire safety director, and Vinny for the tactical. And the thing there was that I point that out because office fires, and Jerry will and Bob will back me up, are totally different than residential fires. All right. Particularly open floor spaces. And Jerry told you how fast that fire traveled on that floor there. And the
5 feet a minute.
There. And the thing here is, that, you know, that we talk about reflex time, but the time of getting up these stairwells is arduous. And now with all the equipment that you have to take up there, some communities are putting in cash rooms every five floors for predetermined equipment in buildings. So the office buildings they don't happen that often, but when they do, they're just a different ball game.
Not only that, certainly what Jack and I and Jim are bringing to the table, to the fire service, if you will, the reenactment that NIST, National Institute of Standard Technology, they were able to gain and acquire, if you will, four workstations, you know, office desks and things like that, to just use as a study, if you will, igniting four workstations, the same drop ceiling, the same, accessories on the desk, things like that. And just those four workstations really burnt and flashed over under 5 minutes. But the energy that was recorded being generated just from the four workstations was 19 megawatts of energy. 2 megawatts is enough to flash over a room. This was only four workstations. There must have been a dozen workstations in that room. And the only reason I'm bringing up megawatts, you know, Andy Fredericks is a mentor to every one of us. And he wrote an article in Fire Engineering Magazine in 1996, Little Drops of Water. If you were to revisit that article, you will note that Andy Fredericks discusses fire in terms of energy, in megajoules and megawatts. Nobody in that time, in that era, was even speaking of fire in terms of energy. And the reason I'm mentioning it is that this book, we hope to sell it, market it internationally, of course, but Europe and Australia fight their fires with the technique of gas cooling or 3D firefighting. That's not going to work when you're generating energy in the megawatts of, let's say, 19 or greater. You have to fight that fire differently.
And I have to interject real quick here. Andy's collected works will be public. His daughter is finishing the final introduction to it, and that will be being published within the next few weeks.
Oh, great.
And awesome. All right.
It'll be available for purchase legally and not stolen.
Understood. Outstanding.
Understood.
Not stolen, and not stolen from a widow of nine and their family of 9/11.
Gentlemen, I'll wrap things up here. I appreciate you coming on to give everybody a little tease. We had mentioned off the air, we were talking about possible date of it being out, and we're looking at next year, correct, Chief Halton, you think, or late this year?
Early next year. So we'll have it at FDIC for FDIC 2022.
Okay.
It'll be FDIC 2022.
And once again, the book that's coming out, it's called High Rise Buildings, Understanding the Vertical Challenges. And our guests today were the Bobby Halton, Chief Halton, Chief Jerry Tracy, Chief Jack Murphy. And then their third fellow or co-author was James Murtaugh, who is a retired FDNY assistant chief or deputy assistant chief, correct?
Assistant chief.
Gentlemen, thank you. If someone wants to get a hold of you guys to talk further or have questions on high rises, Jerry, how can somebody get a hold of you?
I'll spell it O D A T J A Z Z 108 at Gmail. odatjazz108@gmail.com.
And Chief Murphy?
Yeah, mine is FM, like fire marshal. Name Jack 1948@gmail.com.
And the boss.
Mine is Pronesti. That's
all right. Yeah. All right. Thanks. Great. Yeah. Okay. I have tons of high rise issues. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Outstanding.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
God bless you, Bobby.
You're welcome.
Hey, love you guys.